Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, Sunday afternoon version. Tom Diener and myself, Brian Newbert is on assignment, which he often is, actually, but down in Indianapolis covering some Purdue basketball. AAU saw Miles Colvin and many others last night, and you'll have more of that on the site today. But Tom, a lot going on over this past weekend, obviously with the spring game. We'll start with that one. I'll also talk about the Board of Trustees meeting on Friday because a lot of long-term possibilities and thoughts and planning already being started for Ross Ade Stadium, but also Mackey Arena. But Tom wrote on the 10 takeaways, but now having slept on not just the spring game, but the entirety of spring practice, your thoughts of what we saw yesterday and how did we get something accomplished, we being Purdue, in terms of spring ball?
Yeah, you never want to overreact, I guess, positively or negatively, Alan, with these spring football games. You've seen a lot of them over the years. We'll see these guys who were stars in the spring that you never hear from in the fall. And, so always take what you see with a grain of salt and temper it as well. So having said all that, though, buddy, there still is a lot to like. I guess the first place to start for me would be the defense. And I don't want to get caught up in hyperbole, but I'm going to at least say I think this defense has a chance to be a cut above to maybe even very good. And it begins with a line, Alan, that has a lot of depth. I know George, we all know George Karlaftis is gone. You can't replace the All-American off the edge. But there's probably upwards of 10 to 12 guys that Mark Hagan maybe feel comfortable playing. And you probably won't have to go that deep, but it's comforting to know as a coach that you've got some quality options. You're always going to want to rotate guys on that unit. And I think Mark's going to be able to do that. We saw that unit make some plays yesterday, Alan. Cordae Sidner, a redshirt freshman defensive end, had two of the team's five sacks. We saw Yanni Karlaftis get a sack. Mo Amonade had a sack as well. So they got some pressure on the Purdue quarterbacks. And again, that's always a good sign moving forward. Again, I think the back seven is going to be good. I like the linebacking core. You know, we saw Samisi Fakasiecki on the field yesterday.
Yeah.
And, he missed all last year, as we know, with the ankle injury. He sort of handled with kid gloves this spring. Didn't partake in any real 11-on-11 activity, but he was out there Saturday. And they're having that guy back for a seventh year, Alan. I think he got here in 2015, if you can believe it.
Yeah,
maybe it was 2016. Anyway, Daryl Hazel signed him, so there you go.
Yeah,
a gray beard, if you will. And the secondary was a mess yesterday. We all knew coming in a Saturday it was going to be the injuries, the list. It's a mash unit. Once these guys get healthy, though, Alan, I really like the cornerbacks. You got Corey Trice, Jamari Brown, and the transfer Reese Taylor from Indiana, who played yesterday. The other transfer Bryce Hampton, who played yesterday from Adams State. And T. Denson, don't forget about T. Denson from Kansas State. He missed all this spring. So they're going to have some nice options at cornerback. Safety too, Al. No Marvin Grant on Saturday. No Jalen Graham on Saturday. So once they get those two guys in the fold, at safety, you got to like that position too. So I guess overall, I'm really encouraged by that side of the ball and what it can be in the 2022 season.
Yeah, the quarterbacks are always an attention. I know Aiden O'Connell was just one for seven for 6 yards. They had trouble protecting him early on. Now, that was what I thought was interesting in terms of that. Not that that means much of anything. Michael Lamo was impressive to me, at least throwing the football. He definitely throws and I know Jeff Brohm talked about that last after the game yesterday and talked about that really throughout camp, how he's been really good. Austin Burton didn't throw it all that well yesterday, but he still adds that element. And Brady Allen, we talked while we were watching about, he kind of gives me reminds me of a freshman Kyle Orton, partly because he wears jersey number 18. Kind of that overhand throwing motion that Orton changed a little bit, I think, during his time. But boy, I thought he threw some good passes yesterday. And he's really energetic. That's what I liked about it. I could see some leadership out there, at least a demonstrative ability to do some of that. So what was your take of the quarterbacks in a game that You know, the score, I know the offense, I don't know whether they did that by design, and maybe Jeff Brohm said so. You know, it was, what, 28 to nothing with the defense was ahead at the half, and then they, yeah. the offense started at the 25-yard line, starts in the second half in plus territory and scored a bunch, but maybe they was trying to make the offense feel better. I mean, the offense looked better in the second half, no doubt, but your thoughts on not only the quarterbacks, but just the play of the offense.
Yeah, they were sort of starting drives from, I think, the 30-yard line to begin the second half. So it was all situational.
Yeah, 30, okay. Yeah.
You know, the coaches want to work on different aspects of the game, field positions, situations, whatnot. So, again, grain of salt, remember, temper what we say. But, yeah, you talked about Brady Allen. I tell you what, Allen, what a likable kid, too.
Yeah.
What a likable young man. I've visited with him often the last 9 months or so. And we talked to him again yesterday. Great personality. Handles himself very well. Allen, he's every bit of 6'6", too.
Yeah.
And he talked about his throwing motion. He's got a strong arm. And he's got the one thing every coach loves, Allen. He really wants to get better.
Yeah.
And he puts in the work, boy. He's got talent and he's got a work ethic. So that's a nice combination for Purdue moving forward. To have Allen in the incubator, if you will, because I think we all agree, right? He's probably going to redshirt this year, maybe be the guy in 2023. I'm going to go ahead and say that's the plan, okay? Is that okay?
Yeah. I think
it's safe to say, no offense to Michael Lamo. I'm sure he's going to be in the Derby too, but it's going to be fun watching those two next year, but let's not get ahead of ourselves, right? Aiden O'Connell, yeah, 1 for 7 with an interception. Again, I'm not worried about Aiden O'Connell. He'll be just fine. Talked about Alamo and Burton, the two guys battling to be the backup. Very similar guys, Allen, from a skill set. Good arms, good athletes, right? Getting a better grasp of the offense, too. I think we talked to Jeff Brohm after the game about the quarterbacks. And yeah, I got the sense from, if you go back and read the stuff or listen to his interview, they're going to have a package of plays for Burton. And
I think so too.
Yeah, I wish I could see him play maybe every game, certain down and distances in the red zone. Who knows? So they've always said as a staff, Allen, that they're going to do whatever they can to win games, and they're going to get guys on the field who can help them. So if they think they can find some role for any player, that they're going to get him in that situation to get him on the field, so that they don't want to see Burton just waste on the sideline, nor do they want that with Michael Lamo too. So healthy competition there. And yeah, it's always going to be a quarterback centric offense. We know that, Allen. To that point, the receiving core was just a shell of itself on Saturday, just like the secondary. The role called of players out is a long one. You know, Milton Wright with his academics, Mershon Rice, TJ Sheffield, you know, Brock Thompson, Abdur-Rahman Yassin, and even Deion Burks didn't play Saturday, Allen, sort of a rising redshirt freshman. So Zion Steptoe, he had a chance to step up, if you will. And Brady had a lot of good things to say about him after the game. They sort of developed the chemistry, and I thought Zion Steptoe did look good.
And he passes the eyeball test, absolutely. He can run him around a little bit.
Yeah, I think all 5 passes. Preston Terrell, the kid from Brownsburg, the redshirt freshman, number 84. Boy, he's got a nice-looking body for a wide receiver. He can jump. He was like a state high jump champ. And I know it's a crowded room for the receivers, but, boy, Preston Terrell, number 84, if not now, later, I think he's going to be a guy who plays a big role for this offense, too. And if you notice, too, Saturday, Allen, we didn't see hide nor hair of Payne Durham or Garrett Miller.
Right.
They were dressed, of course, but we knew that they likely weren't going to play. These guys dealt with a lot of issues last year. Jeff Brohm and Ryan Wallace, the position coach, told us they just want to get these guys to camp and to fall healthy because, you know, this may be a bit of hyperbole, but there's probably going to be few better tight end tandems in the Big Ten than your tandem of Payne Durham and Garrett Miller, Allen.
Well, and then Payne Durham also certainly checks that box on the leadership side. I mean, about him, about he really might be the best leader on the football team. And you got a good one, I think, in Aiden O'Connell, different maybe personality type, but a guy that can get it done. So there's a lot of things there. Okay, we also had our first look at Samson James, and he got a chance to watch him run around a little bit. He can make some people miss, which we know. He's made Purdue miss a couple of years ago in a game in 2019. So any thoughts of and obviously King Drew got his share of carries as well yesterday. Anything that you saw there that jumped off the page at you?
Yeah, Samson did look good. He flashed, I think. I'm going to get about 8 or 9 carries. He's in great shape. I guess he's not quite as big as I thought he was. But he more than passes the eyeball test. And Alan, he was not a consistent participant in practice the first 2 weeks of spring drills. From our observations, we didn't get to see all the practices, of course. And they had their spring break, came back for 3 more weeks. And when we were out there 4 or 5 times, when they got back from spring break, Samson James is always out there. So my point being is he's been a regular participant in practices, which is good. And Jeff Rahm said it was nice to get him some live action Saturday. Samson James, I'm not going to say he's going to be an all Big Ten running back, but he can certainly provide needed depth to a unit that still wants some veteran help, Alan. We all know, we've documented it pretty well, that they're still looking for a running back in the portal. And they're still going to continue to look, Alan. And you know what? They may be able to pull a guy out of the portal that's going to come in here and start. So don't be shocked. No offense to King DeRue or Samson James, but they certainly would like an upgrade if they can get it. They can win with those guys, don't get me wrong, but boy, if they could get a guy who could be a difference maker, that would be great. Remember, Dylan Downing was out this spring. He had shoulder surgery. They're going to bring in a couple freshman running backs. Kentrell Marks is a little bigger back. Terrence Thomas is more of a smaller back. But you know what? Maybe the guy who's going to solve all their problems was one of the bigger stories Saturday, number 3, Tyrone Tracy. The Iowa transfer from Decatur Central. And he's a wide receiver by trade, but he's been worked out at running back. We saw that yesterday. And I don't know, what do you think of Tyrone Tracy, Allen? I think he's going to have to be the playmaker, I think, if this offense wants to be as good as we think it can be.
Well, I think you have to have somebody can stretch some, cause the defensive coordinators to have to overreact to some extent. Maybe it's the jersey number 2 as well, this David Bell. But he has a lot of – I really liked – he, again, passes the eyeball test. He's fleet back there, had a couple carries, had a drop early, but he had also had at least a touchdown catch too on a good play. He's going to be a guy that I think you identified that from the get-go, that he is going to be a guy that's going to be in the mix, clearly, and be a major player if Purdue's going to be good. It's overstated. Who knows? Again, almost impossible to tell. If you look at that, you say, well, wait, the offense is lacking a little bit after if you just went on yesterday's game. But, again, it means little because so many of the players that are going to play weren't there. I thought they got some things accomplished by getting – it's just important to get a Samson James on the field, get a Tyrone Tracy looked at. Get a Tyrone, as silly as it sounds, get Tyrone Tracy on film. I mean, Penn State's obviously, they was on a Big Ten Network yesterday. You can rest assured they're smart enough. James Franklin's smart enough to know it doesn't mean a lot, but he does know. He can certainly identify tendencies. And, of course, that game on September 1st, I'm sure Penn State's preparations started yesterday for that, just getting a look at some of Purdue's personnel and some of the folks that may go in. And I thought that, I think that's an interesting sidelight is that, you want guys hungry. You got guys that can get on the field that show at least that they can play. You're right. There are, we can go back over the years and how many spring game all-stars, like I said, never saw the field. Yeah. But I do think you do find out a little bit about how guys do when the lights are on, when competition comes. And as we've talked about, I think, we all know about what happened in Nashville last December, late December, where Purdue was really depleted. And there were a number of guys that had to come and hadn't played all year, basically, or very little, had to come and make plays. So you want that type of locker room, so to speak. And I think, in fairness, that is a net positive of having some depleted rosters. You got some guys that got a little bit more repetitions.
Yeah, it gives them encouragement, right, Alan? It gives them encouragement to keep sticking with it because it's a lot of hard work lifting weights and practicing. And a lot of sacrifices are made, and it's nice to see that rewarded as a player when you get a chance to play, even if it is a spring game. And you talked about the Music City Bowl. I mentioned this to you a week or two ago. I marveled at that game and the personnel Purdue was missing, you know.
Yeah.
Milton Wright, David Bell, your number one left tackle, Greg Long, on offense, were all out. Payne Durham and Garrett Miller were hanging by a thread. Branson Dean, your best defensive tackle, was out. You lost your number two quarterback, Dedrick Mackey, as well. George Karloftis didn't play. And Purdue still found a way to run the game. And Jeff Brom can always point to that game and say, look, guys, that's what we're talking about. You never know when your time's going to come, so be ready. And those guys certainly responded that day down in Music City. And this team, of course, does have a lot of work to do. And obviously the offensive line, you know, we could just cut and paste this every year, right? The offensive line's a concern for Purdue. And they still are battling depth issues. They've got two stalwarts, or at least anchors, I'll call them, and Gus Hartwig and Spencer Holstedge at guard and center. You know, they're going to get Eric Miller back, who was out all spring after shoulder surgery. You know, remember this too. They're going to have the kid from Kent State coming in, Daniel Johnson. He may not start, but he's going to give him a nice veteran at tackle to help. Cam Craig started it at one tackle spot yesterday. And we saw Marcus Bow out there and Mohamed Musa as well.
Yeah.
So they've got, and also the one kid who just has never gotten started this spring, who came early, was the Sione Finau, the transfer from Florida International. He started to practice late in spring practice. I don't think he played at all yesterday. Probably didn't want to take any chances, but you know, that's a kid they thought was maybe going to come in and start at right guard with Tyler Witt gone. So hopefully he heals up over the summer. Now he's a veteran option too. So I guess my point is you get Finau, you get Daniel Johnson, a couple of veterans coming in to go with the, you know, some solid vets and two rising talents in Musa and Bo. Dale Williams may have some players to work with up front.
Yeah. I thought Musa and Bo getting back that eyeball test. They look the part, and they don't seem to be afraid of, being aggressive in physical context. So yeah, you just want to have depth there in a position too, where you kind of want to get it at some point in time. If you're going to be a program that Purdue, you know, right now is going to be an upper echelon Western Division preseason pick, one would have to think that, you know, you got to get a position where you can just reload that offensive line as much as possible. And when you're in year six or your time, it needs to be getting closer and closer to that. So maybe a little bit of a blessing in disguise of some of the injuries and the fact that they're still actively looking for guys that can come in and make a difference right on. And that's going to be a never ending process, I wouldn't think, if you're Jeff Brohm and Dale Williams trying to figure out how to build that offensive line.
Yeah. Yeah. They're always going to take a lineman. They had an offer out to a kid from Northern Colorado who ended up committing to Washington State. But, you know, Jeff Brohm has said, Alan, that Purdue spring ball is over. Throughout the rest of this month, you're going to see all the other schools conclude their spring practices. Once that's done, then you're going to see a wave of players hit the portal here. And that's when, you know, everybody's going to get their shopping cart back out. And believe me, Purdue looks every day like every school does. They're kicking tires. The moment someone hits the portal, they're kicking tires and saying, is this the guy we want to chase? So they're on it. Again, offensive line, they're always going to take a guy if he really is an upgrade. Same for the defensive line. And again, the running back spot we talked about. And you know, the only other spot I think, I mean, it's crazy to say this. I think they take any player, regardless of position, except maybe quarterback, who they think can make them better at a certain spot. So they're never going to close the door on any position. But if there were priorities, again, the trenches, and then again, running back. So like I said, keep your eyes peeled over the next coming months. The roster's going to change. I think I can guarantee you that. You're going to see some players leave too as well, Alan. So again, that's always something that happens to every program. So expect to see some roster attrition for Purdue as well.
Yeah, I think Jeff Brohm also, again, I'm knowing what we know about him, you know, they ran some gadget plays. Just get more stuff on because, again, You know, and that's what's so crazy. I know these spring games around the Big Ten and around the country are the proverbial grain of salt games, but they become a little more important because you need to, if you're doing your job in player personnel, you'd have to do exactly what you're talking about. If you're Purdue, you're watching everybody's spring game from everybody in the Big Ten, Notre Dame, whatever it takes. And most of those are now going to be in future weeks. Obviously, with Easter next week, I don't know if a lot of teams have them, but there's a few. 23rd and whatever. And I'm just saying, you've got to have somebody watching that and saying, well, here's a guy that played a lot and didn't play or something, you know, is anybody just a fascinating time, a challenging time from a player personnel standpoint. I don't know how those guys are going to do it consistently. And yet, you know, that Purdue's already had a good deal of success. In my view, it's made change the face of their team in some ways, many ways through the portal. And even though there may not be anybody right now, that may change in 2 to 3 weeks. And I think that's what makes an interesting dynamic of watching these games and and seeing who's out there. You know, we always laugh about Ohio. Just look at Ohio State's second, third team. They're all highly, highly ranked guys coming in. Why not? You know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. And then once you get them, they're not going anyplace else. I mean, they can go someplace else, but they got to sit, right? So they they can't just completely bounce around. They're almost like they've been vaccinated from that point. So interesting study storyline. We put the wraps on spring practice on the 9th of April. And I'm sure you'll have a lot of stuff as you kind of look ahead and look back at that. All right. You obviously also had a busy Friday morning. I think the Board of Trustees meeting is over. It just got done a few minutes ago. But no, it was a three or four hour event. A lot going on at the university. Of course, this is a big weekend, Parents Weekend on campus, Bug Bowl, Purdue Challenge, all that stuff. A lot of people in the spring game, a lot of people on campus. But some really big happenings. Obviously, the announcement of the $45 million plus renovation to Ross State Stadium. Nearly $7 million to Mackey Arena, the dining court. What was your general takeaway on those things? And obviously you got a chance to talk to Mike Babinski as well, but we've written about the fact that the tunnel was coming. We knew the dining hall was coming. Now that it's official, what's the next step?
Yeah, Brian had talked to Babinski, in February, I think, had a little precursor to this. So we all sort of knew what to expect on Friday morning when the board met. In Stewart Center, Alan, it's always fun to go back to Stewart Center as a former student.
Yeah, there you go. All the way down that hallway in the far southwestern corner there.
You know, walk down Stewart, then you walk out as I walk through the Union. Remember as a student, but I digress with my reminiscing.
Yeah,
you know, the of course, the Ross Aid work, you know, initially when Babinski first started talking about this, Alan, the price tag was $30 million. Of course, the pandemic hits. You know, we all know, it seems like everything in the world, the prices has gone up on supplies, and there's always supply and demand. There's a chain of supplies that seems like it's short, and it's hard to get these resources. No doubt. So again, from $30 million pre-pandemic to now, what do you say, almost $45 million? And Mike said that was a high ball number, Alan. It may not be that high, but probably going to be close to it. He was just kind of given a worst case scenario, I guess, from a cost perspective. Bottom line is this, it's going to cost more money 18 months or 2 years later. So here we are. Work's going to begin as soon as this season ends, probably late November, early December. They want to get it completed before the start of 2023. He called it an ambitious timeline. I guess you're going to be able to get it done, or he wouldn't have said that publicly. Three big elements you alluded to: the tunnel, of course, from the Kosich Football Performance Complex into Ross Aid Stadium. It's going to be pretty cool, Alan. Cool way to enter for the players. Right now, ever since they built that football facility, that's a really circuitous route to the field for the players. They got to walk all the way through the Mollenkopf, out the Mollenkopf, near that, the John Wooden statue, right, not that far down. Then they cross over John Wooden Drive into the stadium. So anyway, this will be a kind of a fun, kind of a buzzy element, I think, to add for game day atmosphere and for the players' sake, too. The nutrition/dining hall, it's going to sit right where the current Purdue team store does, sort of in the northeast corner of Ross Aid Stadium. It's not just for the football players, of course. It's going to be for all the student athletes. But let's not kid ourselves, right, Alan? It's about football.
Yeah.
And while the Kozich facility is beautiful, my friend, it should have had some type of dining facility built when it was constructed in 2017. That didn't take place. So this is a response. They're going to finally get some type of a facility right adjacent to the football facility to really feed, again, the football players and everybody else. So that'll be nice. And then the South End Zone scoreboard, to me, that was the biggest, I think, buzzy item. And just because of, I guess, a transformation that's going to take place down there physically, I still really had a hard time. I asked Mike Bobinski to describe what's going to happen down there. Still a little confused. To that point, the renderings aren't going to be available till probably midsummer. So we're not going to get a look at what it really is going to be once completion is done. But again, there's going to be some type of seats built in and around the scoreboard. They're going to maintain the lower seats in the south end zone. They're going to have some type of terrace seating in the corners where I guess he said you could stand or pull down a seat and sit and watch games. He said this is the type of seating they have on a lot of MLS stadiums. And I guess maybe the biggest eyebrow raiser was the thought that they're considering, it's not a done deal, they're just considering moving students to the south end zone. And so, again, that's just something that he wants to make it a raucous atmosphere, I think was the word he used. And so, again, that's the Rossaid project, the Mackey one you talked about, almost $7 million, locker room renovations, player lounges, and the wooden club will be redone. Mike Bobinski said, Alan, the locker rooms had not been touched in 12 years. While they're still very nice, I think we all know you got to keep up with the Joneses, right? And 12 years is a long time not to have any upgrades to the locker room for the basketball teams. So that's the Mackey renovations there as well. So, you know, it's a fun time anytime that you're having physical facilities get altered here. And again, the facilities at Purdue, Rossaid, I think it's going to be a fun upgrade to watch. It's sort of like, I guess, morph before our very eyes for the next 12 to 15 or 16 months.
Yeah, it is. And you know, you look at basketball, obviously even the wooden club at the end of the tunnel in Mackey Arena, they use that for other things and they want to be able to upgrade that so that they can do maybe some dining, also possibilities down there, be able to hold more team meetings and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of ancillary things, as I understand it, that go towards that. Obviously, also in Mackey Arena, some seating and where the premium seating that's going to change on.
Yes, that's another one. And work has already begun on that.
Yeah, across from the team.
They're busting up concrete right now for those seats in Mackey Arena.
And I'm really interested to see how that's going to look because they are reseating Mackey this summer, I should say. So everybody's going to have to, through John Purdue Club, et cetera, use their priority points and be able to pick what seats they're going to get. That always is it's usually a five-year window that got changed because of COVID. They pushed it back a year or two, as I recall. And, you know, it's interesting about the South End Zone because Major League Baseball, I know, has done that also in some parks where fans, mostly young fans, mm-hmm. can spend and it might be in Cleveland, it might be in Philly, I'm not sure, but $300 a year, and you basically get a season ticket to stand. And so they want bodies in, you know, and those young people away, and that's how those youngsters, and we're not in that category anymore, Tom, where they have a chance to go and hang out and be at the games. And one thing we saw last year in Rossaid Stadium, which I think is really an interesting thing post-COVID, obviously people were eager to get back to the stadium, you know, but it was the attendance was, I think, exceeded expectations just because fans were eager to get back. And I think that there is demand and there is that demand for that type of seating. It'll be interesting to see. I'm skeptical that they'll ultimately move all this. I have to see the configuration to believe that they'll move all the students to the south end. That would surprise me, but I do think that they're trying to formulate that atmosphere and do things to close in that facility and make it make it even more intimate. Almost what in that part, even on the north end, and, you know, and this is also a key thing that's been talked about. It is the first step. They wanted, they had, remember we talked before COVID about these large, this really overriding $200 to $300 million project, whatever that was going to be, for all these things. This is the first bite out of it. And Purdue was fortunate because, and to its own strength to be able to not have as huge a debt with respect to COVID. You know, they were able to raise the money for the $18 million and basically are walking in pretty much in the same position they were. So all those things puts Purdue in a good position in some ways to take those incremental steps moving forward. And I think that's, as I understand it, kind of what they're trying to get done.
Yeah, Purdue seems like it did emerge from the pandemic pretty good financial shape.
Yeah.
In respect to some of these other institutions. Real couple of other real quick notes, Alan. There's, I think Bobinski said 12,000 student season tickets typically. So that's the number you're looking at. And another item I forgot to talk about as far as the south end zone goes, which is interesting, is they're going to build some type of, I don't know what it's going to be, but you're going to be able to walk the complete circle of Mackey Arena. They're going to connect the east the east stands to the west stands in the south ends. You're not going to have to take that cumbersome trek if you could even make it. I mean, they may not even walk between those sides. But anyway, for now, they're going to build some type of, a ramp. I don't know what it is, but it's going to be a connector, I think was the way Mike put it. And so you're going to be able to walk between the whole circle of the stadium, if you like. So that's going to be kind of cool, I think. Bring back days, Alan, to when they had the old asphalt track around the perimeter of the field and the chain link fence. Remember, you could walk around the field way back in the day before they had that 1993 stampede at Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Things got crushed. So yeah, those were a couple of things also with the south ends. And of course, to Alan, I guess the number three item, heck, maybe it was the biggest item, depending on your point of view from Friday, was extension for Jeff Brohm.
Yeah, yeah.
Was expected. You know, again, we had sort of tipped fans off about this was coming. A modest 2 years was added. So his deal was to end in 2025. And now it's slid in 2027. Nothing crazy with salary increases. He is getting more money for his assistant coaching pool. And he's got a couple retention bonuses, Alan, if he's sticking around. I think one kicks in 2024, maybe $500,000. And if he's there March 1st, 2026, I think it's $1 million. But Mike told us this too, that the buyout for Jeff Brohm remains just $1 million. So again, they got Coach Brohm wrapped up here for a few more years. And, you know, he's 5 years in. I think he's 28 and 29, I want to say, Alan. Three bowls in 5 years. He's won two of the three bowls. Coming off the first 9-win season since 2003. Alan, when was the last time there was this much excitement going into an off season? Maybe after 2017, was it as exciting then as it is now? I guess my point is, he's created the buzz. He certainly built this program back to respectability because you were here for the Daryl Hazel era. Bismol. He basically started from ground zero. And I think we all can agree. There's been a couple hiccups for Jeff Brohm, but by and large, this isn't an easy job. And I think he's done pretty well considering what he's had to work with from the start.
Yeah, I think you go back and say, go look back and on December the 2016, the day he's hired, and say after 5 years, they'd be at 500 and have three bowl games. It didn't take the route that some of us expected with the dips in 19 and 20, though circumstances certainly played into that. But the rebounding, responsive and bouncing back in 21 was huge. And, you know, you've written about this many times. Think about this. Going back to my lifetime, it dates back to 1959, you have – if Jeff Brohm makes it to year 7 at Purdue, which would mean starting the 2023 season – he will be just the third coach to do so. Jack Mullenkopf, then you've got Joe Tiller and Jeff Brohm. So that is an interesting thought. You know, you think about all the continuity in men's basketball at Purdue and two coaches dating back to 1980. I think it's maybe become more and more important in college sports. And if you can keep that, now we know that Jeff Brohm, Jeff Brohm gets Purdue to Indianapolis in the West Division Championship, there are going to be a lot of people interested in him. And we understand the world and the marketplace as it is. You know, obviously, he came close to leaving to Louisville back in 2018. Anything can happen, and you don't want to presume. But you do want to do enough in a contract to make sure you plant enough incentive to make him think twice about other options if you're assuming you still want him around. And they definitely want him around at this point. He certainly showed that last year with a 9-win season. Somewhat of a different, Purdue hasn't done that all that often in the 21st century. So,
there have only been nobody before Mollenkopf coached more than 7 years.
Right. Mollenkopf coached coached 13, but then DeMoss was just three.
What about before Mollenkopf?
Well, Stu Holcomb would have been 9 years, 1947 to 1955.
I've been writing that Brohm's going to be the first, there's only been two coaches since Mollenkopf to get into a sixth year.
Right.
It was Tiller, and the other one's Jim Coletto.
Coletto was the sixth and final year in 1996.
Yeah.
So, again, longevity has not been a strength of coaching. And it isn't a strength in a lot of places, not just Purdue, but it is really a thing. And, you look at Jeff Brohm, who's, 51, 52 years old?
He's going to be 51 this month, Alan.
Yeah, so he's a guy that has got – a lot of time left. We know he's passionate. You know, this is what he loves to do, and he's going to be coaching somewhere. I think Purdue would love to see that continuity be developed, continue to develop that brand, that identity that he has. He's developed that at Purdue. When you're recruiting, being recruited to Purdue, you know what you're going to get in terms of what Jeff wants to do offensively. And he's starting to getting that defensive side, getting that the way he wants it as well. So, yeah, it in today's world, in 2022, with NIL and portal, there's the same thing with coaches. Nothing is set in stone. Nothing is absolutely permanent. But I think it was important naturally had to be made, the extension. And you have to hope, if you're Mike Babinski and company, that you can get Jeff Brohm into a second decade of coaching here if you can. And I think that would be a tremendous thing for the program. Yeah. And my guess is it will have level success if it does so. So we shall see. Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to add to this conversation?
People are starting to work on all the preseason magazines, for whatever that's worth, Alan.
Yeah.
I think people are going to pick Wisconsin to win the West, but I wouldn't be shocked if Purdue picked as high as second by a lot of people in the Big Ten West. I think, not to heap pressure on everybody and Kozich, but I think a bowl game is a foregone conclusion for this coming year. I think the big question is going to be, what type of bowl game, how big of a bowl can Purdue go to, and can they really challenge to win the West? How's that for pressure?
Yeah, I think that's part of the fun of it. A New Year's Day would be a good thing if you can get there. There's some great options in the Big Ten, or at least around that. That would be a heck of an accomplishment. And you think about it, Purdue's been to two Rose Bowls in its history, took Hall of Fame level quarterbacks to get there. Aiden O'Connell's a pretty amazing story, and could be a great story in on the landscape of college football for the walk-on, second team All Big Ten last year, and really still one of the top two or three quarterbacks in the league, certainly. And that's going to be an interesting storyline. So a lot to talk about, and we'll look forward to doing so. It'll be September 1st before you know it, though. We know with the weather around here, we never wish the summers away. We just want to get it to spring and summer after a very chilly day in Ross-Ade Stadium. But we didn't feel it too bad. We were inside, so that was helpful.
Yeah.
So, all right, Tom, thank you. I want to thank our sponsor, the Union Club Hotel, 811 Restaurant, Boiler Up Bar. We appreciate all that they do for us. Brian Newbert, my guess is if he's not on the recruiting trail or on the AAU trail next week, will join us again. We were going to try to keep our Saturday simulcast going throughout. There may be a week or two we miss, but there won't be many as we do that throughout the what we call the off-season. Obviously, a lot of Purdue sports teams still competing the spring sports as well. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks for watching and listening. Stay tuned for lots of recruiting basketball recruiting stuff on the site this week, in addition to Tom's rehash of spring ball and what will maybe next for Jeff Brohm and company. We'll look forward to that as well. So have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk, see you next week on our Saturday simulcast.